Welcome to The Forum on 90.5 WCBE. Every week we bring you the conversations shaping Columbus, straight from the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday networking luncheons downtown. The Forum is where leaders, thinkers, and community voices like yours come together to tackle the issues that matter most to Central Ohio. Want to join us in person? Tickets and details about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. Mitch Menchaca is the new CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Once a visitor who thought there might be nothing to do in Columbus, he returns to a city he's come to love, ready to build on GCAC's momentum during a pivotal time for the arts. This week, we explore how the arts drive Columbus's economic vitality, create community identity, and deepen civic life. Joining us this week, Mitch Menchaca, President and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Your host is Sophia Fiffner, President and CEO of the Columbus Metropolitan Club. Let's dive into this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, The Power of the Arts in a Changing City.
Mitch, we are so excited to have you here in Central Ohio. And, you know, my hope for this conversation is one, not only to give the audience an opportunity to ask questions, because that's what we do every single week here at the CMC, but to ask a few questions about you, who you are, and what you're excited about for the future. So first, just so people have an understanding of why you're so passionate about the arts and theater, you studied theater as a young professional. Did you ever envision yourself on this side of the stage?
I think when I waited my 90th table at Denny's, I had to realize another path in the arts. So I just want to first start by saying thank you to this amazing community that's been very welcoming to me and my partner, Emmett. Let's give him a round of applause. Starting his new job on Monday at Nationwide. They are on our side. Thanks for that. But we did. We moved here in a snowstorm, and then we got more snow and more snow. And it's spring is going to be great. So, but I'm in awe of this view. I can see my house from here. So I just really wanted to say thank you to the Columbus community, the arts community, and the business community, and the general community. So thank you for your warm welcome. So give yourselves a round of applause. Yeah. All right, so back to the topic at hand. I am a product of a couple of things. One is public funding for the arts. I was pushed into parks and recreation programs as a kid. I'm a Gen Xer, Xenial, where we were latchkey kids and done all that, so my parents would be like, we're gonna pick you up at 7, go to Parks and Recreation, do whatever they're doing there. And so it was really something for me to do and build community. If it weren't for the arts in high school, I don't know if I would be here. I was trying to figure out who I was as a person, my sexual orientation, going to an all-boys Catholic high school, not the easiest when you're trying to figure that out. But the theater and drama programs really set the stage for that, and was something that I thought I would be able to do academically and then maybe professionally. And academically, I did it for a couple of years, and then a best friend of mine at the time said, I'm done with school, I'm moving to LA, you should come too, and we should try this. And she got a great career in scenic design, and I made the joke, but I waited a lot of tables at Denny's. So I remember I auditioned for film and television. Les Mis is my favorite musical in the entire world. I got to audition, but this is how the audition went. You. That not you was me. That was the end of my Broadway musical career. So I went back to Arizona and had to think about what to do, and my advisors cobbled a liberal studies degree and then started my career in arts administration.
So I love that you mentioned one, love Les Mis. Hope you saw it here in Columbus.
Saw it for the 40th time at the
yes.
Ohio Theater.
And then on top of that, you mentioned recreation and parks and just access to creative spaces and how critical that is for every community. You know, being an arts leader, you sit at the intersect of public, private, nonprofit, and working with all of those different leaders. In Central Ohio, we oftentimes talk about the Columbus Way as a way of getting things done. How do you think your experiences as someone who's led arts organizations, specifically at that intersect, has impacted how you navigate bringing new people into the space of arts?
So a little truth telling here. I've actually never worked in a traditional arts organization ever, like a theater company, a dance company, you know, an opera company. I've always been in the intersection of arts and, so arts and government, arts and philanthropy. I started my career at the State Humanities Council in Arizona, then moved to the State Arts Commission, where my main portfolio were tribal museums. We have 23 recognized tribal communities in Arizona. Each has a cultural center, and that's how the state invested. Small performing arts organizations and local arts councils. So it was my first entry point. And then went to the national level at Americans for the Arts and some other places. But in all of these realms, it had to be partnerships. It had to be partnerships with other sectors, with other like organizations and state government. You know, we worked with our tourism office, worked with our community economic development office, and most recently I was in city government in Phoenix in a very similar job, but in City Hall, where I had city council on the floor above me. Some people have heard this joke where they really literally come down and be like, I'm going to be in a parade and I need a mariachi band and you need to find it. So I'm glad to be a partner with government here, but what I miss is being in everyone's business at City Hall. So I'm going to hold up court at City Hall over here on Tuesdays. No, just kidding. But I do want to be more involved. But those partnerships are really what brings that together, listening to communities and being able to bring resources to the table, money, technical assistance, capacity building. Those elements have really helped my leadership, and I think it ties really nicely into the Columbus Way.
So tell me, in your stories about working at City Hall or local government, for those of you who have worked in local government, that sounds about right. So sometimes people think of art in the arts community as something that should just be simply decorative, you know, something for entertainment or escape, that art isn't political. Do you feel that art is political? Why or why not?
I think art can be political in the sense that artists can make statements, arts organizations can present things that give a political side, but we like to feel that we are neutral. We are on both sides of the aisle. It's not a partisan issue, but I think that public funding for the arts is always on some sort of radar or chopping block, and I just was with my peers of large city arts councils a couple weeks ago in New Orleans, and we talked about this continuum, that you're trying to build something, you get to the apex, and you think you're really strong there, and then something slips, and you get into this infinity loop of trying to make the case, trying to get back to that apex, and I feel like the arts is always there. And I think it's because the arts has a sting to it. Some people only understand it as something that maybe the wealthy have, or it's gluing macaroni on paper plates, or it's the traditional arts, or they don't understand that it's a wide net that's all around. It's fashion, it's culinary, it's music, it's dance. And so I think when we tell people that art is all around you, I think that we need to make the better case. Just like restaurants. Restaurants are not for everybody, but no one's like, kick the restaurants out of town. No, they're like, I'm just going to cook for myself and not go to them, or I'll go to them on a special occasion. But they still exist in our ecosystem. So I think we just have always got stuck in this infinity loop, and we need to like pull ourselves out of it to think of a different way of talking about public funding for the arts that makes elected officials, authorizers, business community, the general public understand that it's not a luxury, it's just a part of life.
So you mentioned a couple of things. One is, I want to dive deeper into politics, but before I do that, you mentioned public funding, and I think that's a really important conversation for Central Ohio right now. The Dispatch recently had an article about the results from the FRAC and FRAC funding, and specifically that the report is recommending redirecting Columbus's hotel motel tax so that Experience Columbus's shares rise from 43% to 72%, essentially eliminating GCAC's share entirely. You know, what does it feel like to walk into a leadership role where you're immediately facing a proposal that could really get a good percentage of the funding for your organization?
Well, coming from city government in Phoenix, I had to, every spring, go back to mayor and council and our city management and beg for my budget every year as to just put it as a baseline. So I'm not new to walking into a room where they're like, I remember when I worked at the State Arts Commission in Arizona, the legislature decided they were going to take the State Arts Commission's budget to give to the mining department to buy old tires to fill in abandoned mines. So I have seen it all. So I think what we have to do is when we look at recommendations like that, you know, I have put mayoral committees together to make recommendations, and that's what they are. And I think we have to look at all different sides of funding to see what makes sense in a community. I, stepping into this role, do not want a single dollar to go away. In fact, I'd like more dollars. If you give us all of that money, we can do magic, and I'll do anything to raise a dollar for the arts. So I'm just putting that out there that we want to keep our dollars, and there are recommendations for other revenue streams, and we want to look at those holistically because we don't want to poo-poo any kind of future revenue growth. So I think that we just have to be mindful. I think the FRAC, I hate that term though, the Funding Review Advisory Committee, my first in-person interview was Sunshine and Rainbows. The second was, we're being fracked. And Ken Wilson was like, I've never heard it as a verb. But yes, it is a verb. But I think that we just have to look at these things holistically. It's a hurry up and wait game. We don't know when City Council wants to look at those recommendations, talk about them, but I think all three areas, tourism, arts and culture, and health and human services, are just gonna make the case and figure out how to work together and see what makes sense for our future of our funding.
So Columbus doesn't have a formal Percent for Art program. Can you share a little bit about what that is and why that might be a beneficial solution for Central Ohio, if you see it as a solution?
It is a resource for Central Ohio. I wouldn't say it's a solution. So in Phoenix, we have one of the oldest public art programs in the nation. We have a Percent for Art program, which means for every penny on every dollar the city spends on itself, they put that towards art. And so I had a five-year capital improvement budget that was about $25 to $30 million, give or take the year. And so we would take those monies, and if we tore up a neighborhood to do a drought pipeline project, which we did, we would have to say mea culpa to the community. We're going to leave it in better shape, and we'll put some sort of art component. In that, it was on the side of a freeway, so we found some nice sound walls to do some artistic impressions. And that's one of the positive but negatives. It has to be at or near the capital improvement site, at least in Arizona. But I've also worked on some really great projects. One of my last ones was a pedestrian bridge over a new freeway. And my team, you know, we have city engineer, we have street transportation, we have ADOT, Arizona Department of Transportation, but my team had to make sure that the bridge initially didn't fall down. Like, that was the first thing we had to do with our money, and then figure out the artistic elements. So it's a great source for public art. It can get dampened in the way that you're like, okay, well, we're brought in late, so now we're going to stamp concrete on the side of a road. But the reason why I say it's a resource and not a solution is when I would go for my budget, and they'd be like, oh, we're going to reduce your grant budget to organizations and artists, but we're going to give you $3 million to do terrazzo floors at the airport. Well, it's not the same. So it's, sure, my budget is bigger, but it's not the same to the community. So we just have to be mindful when we look at new revenue streams for public art. I'm a big proponent of public art. We would love to have some sort of dedicated funding stream, but probably post-FRAC recommendations.
Sure. You know, Columbus is booming in many areas where we have, you know, we're building infrastructure, there are new companies coming to Columbus. You know, and every week at the CMC, we host a different audience, whether it be an audience focused mostly on the arts or education or the economy. What happens when all sectors, when we're thinking about infrastructure for our community, what happens when we include artists in that process, in the design process? What are the results that happen for communities when we include art?
Well, I am a big champion for artists getting involved in everything. I actually got to meet the new president of the OSU when he was still provost, Tom Katzenmeier, and I met him on my second day, and he wanted to know how could arts get more play in their cancer research, in their architecture, in their public policy. And those are the conversations we want to have. How can artists be in social and civic issues? But if we're looking at the design element, I think any new development needs to have some sort of public art component to just show community, to bring community in. Phoenix is not great at its historic preservation. Actually, one of the things that we loved about Columbus was your built environment beauty here. I mean, there's some old construction. Your new construction has art pieces. We live by the current. And so I think when artists get involved, you really bring out the vibrancy ahead of time versus having to be like, now we built this. Now where are we going to put something? And it looks, you know, not right, or you get those whirly-dirlies from China and slap it on a building. Like, I think if you bring the artist in first, it helps create that sense of place and identity. But I think artists should be brought to the table in all aspects of the community.
Do you feel like funding for the arts and supporting all areas of art is something that's pretty prevalent here in Central Ohio? Do you feel like it's a good community for art?
This is probably the case study for supporting the arts. Columbus, you have done it. Continue to fight for it because it truly is a wondrous community. Even with the reductions we took from the county, we're still better off than the fifth largest city. You're better off than San Francisco, Washington, D.C. So our policymakers, our community has fought for it. So we are a model for art support in Columbus and Central Ohio. One of my goals is to be thinking about how Greater Columbus Arts Council really can affect the other cities and towns within the county, because I think there's a little jealousness of Columbus, and I'd be jealous too, but some of the suburbs are doing wondrous things, and just met with New Albany Mayor Sloan Spalding and figuring out how to get public art integrated into New Albany and wanting to have those conversations. But yes, I think Central Ohio, Columbus is a model for how, not just public funding, but for the art support in general.
So each week, I have the pleasure of listening to different leaders and activists and community change makers who are working on a lot of different issues. And over the last year, I feel like, especially for our organizations that are focused in the humanities, a level of fear with regards to uncertainty, specifically at the federal level and international level. And I'd be remiss to not ask your thoughts on this, but with a federal government that for many people feel is policing art and language and words, what does that mean when the government starts to put restrictions on what people can say and how people express themselves?
I think it's detrimental. We went through the culture wars with Roger Mapplethorpe, and we saw a rise in it in the first Trump administration. This current administration in the arts, though, it's really about diversity, equity, and inclusion and how you frame those language. I, being an arts person that's been around the block for a while and a person of color, we know to code switch. And I think the arts are doing a really great job of code switching that DEI work that's been really embedded into other language that means the same, still holds the values, but doesn't get put into ChatGPT at the federal level to find out who's doing bad things. So I think that there's a level of censorship that is happening, but I think we've been clever to figure it out. To the humanities piece, I just met with Rebecca at Ohio Humanities. They lost all of their federal funding, which is what the primary makeup of a humanities council is, although Ohio has some different revenue streams. The judge said, you have to give it back to them, and they're still not getting their money back. And I think one of the issues that is far beyond our age is when we separated arts and humanities at the federal government. Mexico and other international governments have one cultural office. And I think that that's a model that we might need to think about in the next presidential campaign, get somebody who might want to be into that. And I think at the city levels and the state levels, I think that that would also help strengthen that. We are the Greater Columbus Arts Council, but we do fund the humanities and culture. And maybe there's a name change down the road to add another C. I come from the Office of Arts and Culture. So we want to make sure that we're celebrating spaces like the one that we're in today that aren't primarily funded by the arts. And I think that blend is something that we need to hold hands together and talk together for.
So to the artist or individuals who support the arts, which we all do, what do you say to individuals who are feeling a little scared about the uncertainty? What would be your advice or recommendations to them?
Well, I think that artists and scholars, if you're looking at the humanities, have always been on this bridge of uncertainty. We don't fund artists as a profession as we should. We're not out there advocating, you know, for more artists like we do. We need more analysts in our businesses. But artists are, without them, we don't have the arts. We don't have beauty. We don't have the pieces that bring a community together. I don't want to get philosophical, but I feel like we're on the brink of democracy falling. It's already on one knee. And I think artists and scholars can help lift that up. But we need to do a better job of not treating it as gig work or secondary work, and that's a nut that people before me have been trying to crack. I don't know what the special sauce is to be able to do that. There are some artists who have said to me, you know, we're one gig away from being part of the health and human services crisis. I have to have 3 and 4 other jobs. So how can we do a better job of making artists as a profession, just as like you want to be a dentist? You know, I hear those stories. My grandparents were one of them. When I said, I'm going to be an actor, and they're like, no, you're going to be a lawyer because that's a true profession. Well, so is theater, so is dance, so is being an artist. So we have to figure out how to change that stigma.
I love that. I've asked a lot of questions about what's, you know, nationally issues connected to politics. I would love to learn a little bit more about you. What do you like to do for fun? Like, we know, and oftentimes when, you know, when you're watching a CMC forum back, you have people in jackets and we're really formal. But like, what do you like to do for fun? What are you reading right now?
I am reading the Heated Rivalry books. They're much more steamier than the television show, and there's more of them. No, since moving to Columbus, I would say that fun has been trying to explore new neighborhoods, new communities. I got here December 2nd, started the job December 3rd. It wasn't by design. It was by a snowstorm that happened. But I left my job at Phoenix the day before Thanksgiving. So I'm looking forward to some rest and relaxation. I'm going back to Arizona next week where it's already hit 100 degrees. So my body's going to do some sort of shock thing. But love to travel. We were part of a kickball team in Phoenix, probably not doing that now. Like, my body is not a kickball player, but would love to get into some organized sport, maybe bocce ball or something. But trying to build connection. I would say that, again, the community's been very open. The LGBTQIA+ has been very open. The Latino community's been very open. Our African-American community's been very open. So just trying to build community. But for fun, it has been trying to figure out that balance of work life. I met a former board member at coffee, and he was like, I'm very impressed with everything that you've said and you've absorbed. Are you taking time for yourself? So that will come. I just passed 90 days, so not on the probation anymore.
So we're glad that you're not on probation anymore. What's been the most surprising thing about Columbus? You've mentioned in other interviews that Columbus wasn't necessarily on your bingo card as someplace that you would live and work. What's been the most surprising thing in your first 90 plus days?
It's just seeing that this is a world-class city. We have everything here. It's walkable. Sometimes when I walk to work, I'm like, look at me, I'm in Manhattan. If we were to film a movie here. Like, it's just got everything that you need. And previously, my two experiences with Columbus were Donato's Pizza, Ohio State football, when I was like 23. Yeah, let's hear it up for Ohio State and Donato's. And crappy beer. So that was one realm. And then I would come to Ohio Arts Council panels, and I figured it out as I was driving down Front Street. They would put us up at that Capitol Suites Hotel, and that's where I would sit and be like, this is Columbus. So I'm glad to have this new era. And the community has grown in since those 2 points. And I do see Columbus where Phoenix was 10 years ago. And I will say that I think that the Columbus community is being very thoughtful and mindful about how it grows. We've had conversations about it. You're not just trying to tear everything down and build new and trying to, although I'd like to buy a pair of pants downtown and would love a CVS. So if you know of anyone that can do that. But I see that where the growth is, and communities have a choice to make when they're building this. And so Columbus is going in the right direction, but I think 40,000 people are going to move into downtown in the next like 10 years, and we're going to double our population in the county. So we have more choices to make, but definitely a world-class city.
Yeah, so speaking of in 10 years, you know, if you were sitting at the CMC 10 years from now, which by the way, this organization has been around for 50 years, so we'll be here in 10 years. Thank you to CMC and all the people who have invested in us. What would you like to see? What would you like Columbus to see with regards to arts? What would look differently in 10 years?
Oh, well, there would be public art everywhere, both big and small and integrated arts. We wouldn't be having the conversation about the infinity loop of public funding. It would just thrive. Artist space would be a thing. Cultural infrastructure has been a big thing I've heard from artists on my 100-day listening tour. There would be more spaces, and people wouldn't be pushed out. There would be thrive in downtown. There would be thrive in Franklin. There'd be thrive in Hilltop. There'd be thrive everywhere, and that's what I hope happens in 10 years. And the arts are connected to what we talked about at the beginning, the other sectors, the other civic issues. That's what I hope for a lot of communities in 10 years, and that we're not still talking about cultural diversity in the arts, that we're holding on to our public funding for the arts, that we've gotten past that.
All right, so we have a couple more, I have a couple more questions for you, but in the CMC tradition, we love questions from our audience. So for those of you who are in the room, if you have a question, please feel free to line up where Doug is standing here in the corner. Additionally, for those of you who are tuning in from our live stream, feel free to type your question into the chat and we'll try to get to it. A couple more questions for you. So one is personal. One is about what's going on in the future. I'm going to ask the personal one first because, I don't know, I'm nosy. So as a leader, what do you think is the biggest misconception about you? You've had a lot of leadership roles where you're working with community members. What's the biggest misconception that you'd like people to better understand?
I think there's a misconception, and I think it's about the roles, that they are these high level, like I'm not approachable kind of person. I always get people who are like, I feel like I'm a movie star sometimes when people talk to me, and I'm like, I'm just like a regular person, you know, feel free to reach out to me. Here's my card. And I think that there's a misconception. And I think that that's a misconception because there are people in roles like me who are guarded, who do see it as a gatekeeping role and keep their personal and professional lives separate. Mine is all intertwined, and what you see is what you get.
I love that. Thank you so much for sharing that. We have a lot of members who are directors or managers at different organizations, and oftentimes are looking to step into leadership roles like yours. What advice do you have to individuals who are looking to take their next step?
Well, I think it's to be authentic with yourself. It is to know that if you're running an organization, the organization cannot be about you. It has to be about your constituency, the team. And I just want to plug and say we have GCAC in the house, our staff and board members. So very excited to have them because they are the glue that holds this together. So I think it just can't be about you. There's that whole like leader and manager thing. And, you know, if you're trying to micromanage and check time cards and do all that, you're managing, you're not leading. So I think it's being authentic. It's knowing who your team is. It's knowing who your partners are. It's building trust. And I think that those things just really bring into good leadership. And I would say never stop learning. I am a sponge when it comes to things. I was an emerging leader. I think now I'm a submerging leader. But I'm still going to learn on that submerge. We talked about, like, when can you retire? And I'm like, I don't know. If I stayed with the city, 60, but who knows now? But my retirement plan is to move to Palm Springs and open the nicest 7-Eleven in the land. So I will lead from there. But those are the components that I think if you're trying to move up, that you need to hold on to.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Mitch Menchaca is the newly appointed CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Once a visitor who thought there might be nothing to do in Columbus, Mitch returns to a transformed city he's fallen in love with, ready to build on GCAC's momentum at a time of challenge and opportunity for the arts. This week, we're exploring how the arts drive Columbus's economic vitality, create community identity, and deepen civic life. Joining us this week, Mitch Menchaca, President and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Your host is Sophia Fefner, President and CEO of the Columbus Metropolitan Club. We'll get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, The Power of the Arts in a Changing City, after a short break.
Hi there, this is Morgan James. Every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hello, music lovers. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, what music means to them, and so much more. We've chatted about three of my projects, the most recent being Soul Remains the Same, a soul album of songs you would never expect. You can always expect the perfect combination of music and stories on Music Journeys. The show airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To meet and hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, to be the first to be featured three times on the show, look for Music Journeys on WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.com.
Do you love amazing stories? I know I do. I'm Michael Kent, and every week on my show, we examine something from history that's so unbelievable it sounds made up, but is 100% verifiably true. It's a podcast called The Internet Says It's True, and there are hundreds of episodes to choose from. For example, did you know the story of how Leonard Nimoy came up with Live Long and Prosper for Star Trek? Or how Columbia is dealing with a hippo problem that goes back directly to Pablo Escobar? Or one of my favorite stories, a man figured out that a nondescript Winnebago being auctioned online was actually an important part of space exploration history. These are all stories from The Internet Says It's True. Listening to a podcast has never been easier. You can listen through any popular podcast app, through the NPR app, or download the fantastic new WCBE app, click the Podcasts tab, and look for The Internet Says It's True with Michael Kent. You'll have so many stories up your sleeve, you'll feel like the smartest person in the room, especially if you're home alone.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Mitch Menchaca is the new CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Once a visitor who thought there might be nothing to do in Columbus, he returns to a city he's come to love, ready to build on GCAC's momentum during a pivotal time for the arts. This week, we explore how the arts drive Columbus's economic vitality, create community identity, and deepen civic life. Joining us this week, Mitch Menchaca, President and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Your host is Sophia Fefner, President and CEO of the Columbus Metropolitan Club. Let's get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, The Power of the Arts in a Changing City.
All right. And I said two questions, but I actually have one more, Doug. I would be remiss to not ask you about the Arts Festival. What are you looking forward to? Like, what's new or different this year that you want to make sure people pay attention to?
Well, I am thrilled about this, and it is 500,000 people coming to the riverfront right here. I am saving my shekels to buy my first piece at the art festival. I'm really excited about it. It's just the community that's going to come together. It's the visitors. It's the visiting artists. But one of the favorite things that our organization does is support emerging artists, local emerging artists. We help them with technical assistance. We help them mentor so that they can be at their first show right here in Columbus. I'd love to find a donor that we could like help them give them a little money towards their coffers and building that. But seeing how they move that evolution to being an emerging leader to a leader that, or an artist that is going to be able to sell their work here or internationally is really exciting. I'm excited for the Fashion is Art fashion show. I've been dubbed as the MC, so if you'd like to come see that, I'm really excited. And we're going to have Bellinis on Sunday, so that should come on down for Sunday brunch at the Arts Festival.
Oh, that sounds really exciting. I have a lot more questions for you, but I want to make sure that we get to our online audience as well as this in-person audience. So I'll remind you, if you have a question, please feel free to walk over to the microphone to ask your question. And for those of you who are tuning in online, feel free to type it into the chat. We will try to get to as many questions as possible. Doug, what is our first question?
Sophia, thank you very much. Mitch, thank you so much. Great conversation today. As Sophia mentioned, if you have a question for Mitch, please do join us here at the microphone. If you're watching on YouTube, please type your question in the chat. Try to get to as many of those as we can. Great questions at CMC always have two things in common. They can be asked in 30 seconds or less, and a question ends in a certain punctuation mark. What does a question always end with? Ends with a question mark. Thank you. I love our repeat guests. Thank you. And just for the record, too, the Columbus Arts Festival this year, June 12th through 14th this year. So mark your calendars. I'll launch us off with this one. Some people see public art as decoration. You've suggested it can actually solve civic problems. Can you tell us more about art's role in addressing civic issues?
I would say if you feel that art is decoration, then that is a perfectly welcomed choice. And some could say that it is terrible, and some could say that it helps with civic issues. So the one example I give is just really near and dear to me. Phoenix, we won a Bloomberg grant of $1 million to think about how arts can play a role in a civic issue, and ours was heat mitigation. Obviously, Arizona's hot, and we do a really bad job of shade. We like get a stick and we put something on top and say, move around with the sun, and that's the shade. So we hired artists to build 9 temporary, they had to be temporary, installations in 9 city parks to figure out about new materials, new ways of building shade, how does shade really interact with places like parks. And we found out that some materials hold up really well, some don't, and that it just brought community together to talk about the civic issue, because public art isn't just like we're going to pay someone and they're going to build something. There's always community dialogue and community engagement with it if you do it the civic way. And so we could bring people together to talk about what heat mitigation means to you. What does it mean to, why do you stay here? What do you need in your public spaces to keep you cool? And I would say that the majority of them were not poles with toppers on them. And I've left now, and they're now trying to incorporate how to put those temporary projects into a permanent project using the percent for art dollars, so that streetways, parks, community spaces have shade that is both artistic and does the thing of what it's trying to do, which is to cool the pavement, which can get to 140 degrees.
Hi, Mitch. Good to see you. Melanie Korn, president of Columbus College of Art and Design. You started with a little bit of self-deprecating humor about your failed theater career, but I have no doubt that your arts education has contributed to your leadership. So I'm wondering if you could just talk a little bit about what you learned from your arts education and how it has made you a better leader.
Thank you for that. Yes. What it has taught me, especially being a theater student, is that it teaches you about working collaboratively, working with people. It also teaches you the social skills. Sometimes it can be a little awkward, but in certain rooms, you just have to put on a persona and a face, and it taught me trust. Trust in not just we're going to do a show together, but we like to do those trust circles in theater where you close your eyes and spin around. So it taught me all of these social skills that were really meaningful. And what my high school and elementary arts education taught me was that you don't have to be perfect. I'm never going to paint the apple the way the apple is supposed to look, and that's okay. It's just teaching you how to appreciate it and to put that in the back of your mind if you don't go into the arts, if you become a banker, a doctor, etc., to appreciate the arts. So that's what my arts education taught me.
Next question. Mitch, you've worked at the intersection of arts policy, public systems, and cultural leadership in Phoenix and nationally. What lessons from that work do you think Columbus should adopt, and what should it avoid?
Well, I think that the thing that always comes up is all politics are local, and I've seen that at the national, state, and the local level. So even though there's noise from the federal government, and the federal government is doing odd things right now, that we can make the change here on the ground. So to be open about that, I think what I have learned is to not act aggressively in certain situations, like when they wanted to take our budget to put in tires in the mines. You have to be, political and diplomatic in those things. So those are the pitfalls that you can learn, is that you can be too aggressive in your cause and your advocacy, but at the same time, all politics are local, and so that's where I like to be now. I think that that's where change really happens, and that's where you can do more of your partnerships and build a better relationship than at the state and national level.
Hi, my name's Hattie, and I am here with WOSU, but also as a parent of young children who will confidently self-identify as artists at the ages of 6 and almost 9. And I'm curious what your take is on youth voices in informing the arts of a community, and also in thinking about artist spaces. How do you feel about not exclusively or primarily centering the adult artist in those spaces?
That's a really great question. And I think, obviously, our young people are our future. And it is something that I would like GCAC to get more in the space of. Our organizations do a really great job with providing experiences for our young people. But I want to do some more direct work within the schools, because I feel like it's being lost. The experiences I had are not necessarily still in existence. And I believe that young voices are important, especially on the importance of the arts. I was just talking with Lisa Florman, who I saw earlier today from the OSU, about, our kids get so excited about sports. And, I remember when I was given my first Brewers hat, because spring training's big in Phoenix, and I was like, I'm going to be a Brewers fan. And when I was 7 years old, I was going to be a bus driver. So we all have dreams when we're young. But I'm glad that my parents also said, you have to get involved in art and dance and music, because I think that those exposures help with people's learning and become adults, again, whatever realm they would like to be in. But I think when there's hearings for the arts, I think it's really great, whether it's at the school level, the city level, your community, to have your kids there, and to, if they're not comfortable telling their story for them. I went to Peter Pan at Ballet Met, and just saw the wonder of these kids with the moment of seeing them fly and being in amazement. And I'm like, I don't know how to record this without being creepy. So I'm just going to hold that story. But I hope that those parents will come day and one day bring their kids to something to say, this was life-changing, etc. So I do think that we need to center more of the young people and provide opportunity for artists to be working with those young people, and for GCAC to be working with our organizations and community for more opportunities for our young people.
Good afternoon. My name is Candace Klepez, and I'm with Pepper Construction, but I'm also commissioner for the Near East Area Commission. And my question is two-pronged and surrounding public art. So the first piece of that is, so often public art is centrally located, but not necessarily made of materials that age well. So how are we going to, or what are your ideas for making sure that our public art looks as good as it does the first day that it was installed and into the future? And then the second piece is, even within public art, art is a deeply personal thing. And I've recently had an experience where we were evaluating different artists and kind of coming together a bunch of different ideas in order to hone in on an idea for one of our community gardens, and it was a tough, tough process. So under the umbrella of public art, do you have any suggestions on how to better navigate the deeply personal thoughts and feelings that community members have to kind of coalesce on a plan?
Sure. Thank you for those questions. I'll start with the second first, because I will remember the first one. The second piece of that is in public art selection, you need to have as many community voices at the table. You do not need a selection panel of 32 people, but having community members represented on there that can hold those conversations in the selection. And I think when you get down to a finalist pool of 3 to 5 artists, of inviting the community to have dialogue with them in the space, so that when they're dreaming up about their design that they're going to propose to you, those conversations are included. And then when you pick that one voice, another round of community engagement is necessary. I do find in my experience, especially art and private development, you tend to just get a certain voice at the table, and then the art goes up, and then you have people who are like, this doesn't feel like our community. So I would just say multiple rounds of community engagement through the process are important. To the other point of permanent versus temporary public art. And I think I have a very different take on public art than what has been talked about here in Columbus, because I come from an official program where public art is public funds with a public process for a publicly owned space. So that's civic public art. I think there's also art in public spaces that is anything from murals to community work to it just happened overnight. So I think when you get into those conversations and we talk about public art, you have to understand, are you trying to build something temporary or permanent? I love murals. We all love murals. Murals are temporary art. They fade, they need retouching up. If they don't get the love, then they have to be replaced. And I think a lot of communities, Phoenix is one of them, where you got some murals that look pretty. So it's time to do a new call and get that mural replaced. It can even happen with structure. If you're choosing the wrong materials, and the artist that you select should be an advocate and an expert in what material should be working when it's fabricated, because you want things, shade pieces, you couldn't have things that were going to burn you. So we had to get that right off the bat. And so our artists had to know the materials they're working in. And so when you're doing your selection call, you have to be mindful if you're asking for a temporary piece or a permanent piece and what the maintenance of both are going to be. I think we do a lot of public artwork and then are like, someone else will take care of it later on down the road. So building in that maintenance plan. And if you have some public art in your community that's looking a little, you might need to deassess it and start over and know that it can ebb and flow, and document those pieces before they're deassessed and taken down. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Mitch. And I don't think Coda is here today, but you mentioned you had a dream of becoming a bus driver. So Coda might be able to make that dream come true in here in Columbus. Last year, GCAC had to pause grant programs for artists after funding was deferred. Do you see greater certainty coming to the world of arts funding, or is uncertainty just now part of the landscape?
I think uncertainty is always there. Again, being in public funding, we just get into that infinity loop all the time about ebbs and flows. And with things like our hotel tax and our admissions tax, those things go up and down. The admissions tax is a wonderful revenue stream, but it's so unpredictable. You can't look at a year to year and be like, well, that may have made sense. Or we just had a 16% reduction in funding because I guess people just weren't going to things. So it's always a topic of conversation, but we just have to be mindful that we're always telling our story, that we're showing our elected officials that we're good stewards of public funds. County funding was always ad hoc. It was not a tax. It was not a fee. It was from the general fund. And I get it when governments have to make a hard time, and I'm hoping the county will come back. But what I would do differently, especially in uncertain times, is that I've heard from the commissioners, let's look at those other communities in Franklin County outside of Columbus, and that's where we'll put that investment, because then if it's ever deferred or paused, we say this is what is being missed out. So I think you just have to change your strategies, and public funding always has an uncertain level. Just public funding in anything has an uncertainty of where things may go.
Thank you. Sue Porter, Executive Director of Ballet Met. Thank you for calling out Peter Pan. We appreciate it. But I also want to thank you and Emmett. I know that you've only been here for 90 days, but you've spent a whole lot of time in our theaters and seeing a lot of performing arts. Can you talk a little bit about what you've seen and what you think the importance of the performing arts are to our community?
Sure. I am obviously a performing arts nerd. I and Emmett have seen so much performing and visual arts here in the community, more than I probably saw in my last full year in Phoenix. And again, similar role. And I'll tell you, maybe it's just because I work and live downtown. It's accessible to me as a downtowner, but I've also gone outside of the bubble to see performances. I'm excited to go to OSU and see Your Good Man Charlie Brown and their theater program. So it's just really great. And the shows that are here, not just the things that are brought in, but produced, saw Jia Jia's African Hair Braiding a couple weeks ago. Amazing performance. I'm getting ready to see Miss Saigon, which I love at Short North Stage. You know, it's one of the first times they're going to do something of that size. But also, I loved Tacita's art at the Art Museum. That was beautiful. And it's just been eye-opening. And I've been really grateful that the arts gets to play into my day-to-day. I sort of mentioned that blur of personal and professional, but you've all been very welcoming to offer a friends and family discount to me to get into these performances, but I'm just excited for the seasons that are coming and the new exhibitions and what's going to happen with our artist community when spring finally gets here to see what's out there. So it's just been a real treasure and beauty to see it. And I hear this next ballet is not to be missed, so I'm gonna go see that too.
Hey Mitch, I am the vice chair of Kappa Karen Huff Majidzadeh. Thank you so much for being here. And my question is a little bit about strategic and tactical. So we have the Columbus Way here, which I am incredibly proud of. Our collaboration, I think, is second to none of any city in the United States. But I always want action items. So as organizations, what are things that we should be thinking about? If there was one thing we should be doing, and also as individuals that want to support and grow the arts in our community, can you give us some action items?
Yeah, I really appreciate that question. I think there's one action item. It's always to be building relationships with our authorizers, whether that's the elected officials, our county elected, Cheryl Brooks Sullivan, hey, the county commissioners, your village board of trustees, of always keeping them in the loop. I find with arts advocacy or arts relationship, we only will throw our hands down when there's a crisis. And I believe it should be an everyday value proposition to be thanking, to be inviting, to be showcasing the work that we do so that it's not just an 11th hour if they choose to lower our budget in a certain way. But it takes time. So I would say as board members, that should definitely be something that's at the board table to be thinking about how do we thank our funders and their funders. You know, individuals are also a really big piece of our contributed income. So it's always thanking and talking about your work in the community. And it's something that we at GCAC are going to do a job. We put out a fabulous annual report. And then I was like, how do we talk about this monthly? So we're going to be building some pieces to just be able to share with our elected officials about what's going on. It's not like, please give us more. Let me give you a handshake. It's let's talk about the opportunities that are available in your district, in your community. Here's the great things happening at Kappa. Here's the things that are happening in Upper Arlington. So I think it's just that everyday relationship building with those people.
So thank you so much for sharing that. I think that civics and engaging your community leaders is really important for regardless of what you do, whether you work in the private sector, the public sector. In Columbus, we all work together to get things done. As just a final question as we wrap up, in one of your first interviews, you said that your goal for GCAC was to keep the arts alive, which is fracking awesome. Ha ha, verb. How can, you know, given the diversity of individuals in this room, how can we support you to ensure that this organization and the organizations that GCAC supports continues to grow and prosper?
Well, there's two things. One is the arts are going to be alive no matter if the GCACs exist. And that's one area that I do want to find more about in Columbus. In Phoenix, we're 514 square miles of one city. So that's bigger than Franklin County. And so I had to be equitable in all of my funding and my programming with arts and culture. But what I realized is art was happening without the formalization. And I want to know what's going on in communities. It's something I've talked with city council about how we find cultural inventory about what's happening in the arts, in the traditional or the non-organized, the community celebration sense. So I want to know more about what's happening in your neighborhoods and communities. And I think that's really important. And not just to be like, hi, I'm here from GCAC and I'm here to help. I just want to understand and if we can be a resource. The second is go to things. Go to things. So go to a performance, go to the art museum, go to Franklinton Friday, come to the arts festival, and bring people with you. Bring people that are not necessarily people that you would have thought would have enjoyed a performance. Emmett's sister has decided she loves ballet, so we took her to the ballet, and it was a beautiful experience, and now she goes on her own. We want to turn people into arts patrons, but it takes you to invite them. So I would say that's one piece, and then also, if you feel the arts are important, also talk to your electeds about the importance of public funding for the arts and just the arts in general in Columbus and the region.
Let's all give Mitch a round of applause.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. Mitch Menchaca is the newly appointed CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Once a visitor who thought there might be nothing to do in Columbus, Mitch returns to a transformed city he's fallen in love with, ready to build on GCAC's momentum at a time of challenge and opportunity for the arts. This week, we explored how the arts can drive Columbus's economic vitality, create community identity, and deepen civic life. Joining us this week, Mitch Menchaca, President and CEO of the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Your host was Sophia Fiffner, President and CEO of the Columbus Metropolitan Club. This forum was made possible by the Carol A. McGuire Legacy in Civic Engagement Fund. It was sponsored by CK Construction and the Columbus Museum of Art. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. The Columbus Dispatch is our live stream partner. Additional support was provided by Downtown Columbus Incorporated and the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. If you'd like to keep exploring this week's forum topic, our friends at the Columbus Metropolitan Library recommend reading What Art Does, An Unfinished Theory by Brian Eno. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I hope you'll join us. I'm Doug Buchanan. Thanks for listening.